Hey, Slowpokes, do you like video games?
Do you like classic video games?
Do you like not paying for classic video games?
Well, us Slowpokes have something for you.
We're running a giveaway for a Super Nintendo Classic Mini.
So check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/Slowpokes Podcast.
Or our Twitter account at @SlowpokesCast for the details on how you can enter.
That's two entries for one giveaway.
So jump onto your internet device and give it a share, and you could be in the running for this classic SNES console.
The draw closes soon, so get in quick.
Welcome once again to the Slowpokes podcast. I am Slowpoke number 2, David Chilante.
And I am Slowpoke number 1, John Nicolaitis.
Welcome, everybody, to our Titanfall 2 episode.
I don't know the Titanfall music.
Yeah. Does it even have a theme song? I mean, it must, right?
Titanfall.
We just played it. We don't know. Anyway, Titanfall 2, made by Respawn. Yes. Sequel to Titanfall, also made by Respawn.
Yes.
This game was released 28th of October, 2016. Published by everyone's favorite publisher at the moment, EA Games.
Oh, such innocent and pure publishers.
They can do no wrong.
Do no wrong.
The public's darling.
Yes.
So
didn't they win the world's worst company like 2 years in a row?
Of course they did. But like those are joke awards done by anyone and their dogs. Of course they have.
I think the awards were golden pieces of shit. Anyway. Yeah.
John, what were you expecting from your Titanfall 2 experience?
What was I expecting from my Titanfall 2 experience? That's very easy. There's like three sort of major things. The first one was that it would be a fun multiplayer game because the original was just a multiplayer game.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we should start there actually. I played a little bit of the first one.
Yeah.
I played the open beta, which I had heaps of fun with.
Mm-hmm.
And then I bought it because a group of my friends all said that they were going to buy it too. And then none of them did.
Ouch. I was going to say, because that's the way to do it, except for the part where they didn't follow through.
Yeah.
That is the way not to do it.
And so I played a couple of games on my own when they introduced the horde mode thing.
Yep.
But
nah.
It was a really, really good game, but I just couldn't get into it because I didn't have buddies.
And I think, I don't know if we've talked about it before, but having friends play the game with you,
yeah,
that sense of the community bonding.
I require that for any kind of multiplayer.
Yeah.
Game.
Yeah. As someone,
I need to know the person in real life and be on voice chat with them.
Yeah. As someone who's played lots of multiplayer games in the day, like I can't do it now either unless I got friends. So yeah, I have not played any of Titanfall up until this point. So I was
Not even Titanfall 1.
No.
Okay.
I played like the intros for both games, like the dummy trailer, like intros.
Oh,
training.
Like the, yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah,
like the little tutorial type thing.
Yeah. I played that, the first one. I didn't play anything for this one. So I was expecting there to be a great multiplayer game, and I was expecting that the single player campaign that they added, just for no reason that everyone was blown away by, was good because everyone was blown away by it.
Yeah, I had a vague sense that a lot of people were like, oh, it's an impressively good single player campaign.
Yes.
I wasn't expecting too much from it, honestly. I thought I would have just had enough fun being able to do the mechanics without requiring friends or getting slaughtered in multiplayer.
Yeah, like the Call of Duty single players.
Yeah, basically. Just something very serviceable that lets me do the thing, have a couple of big explosions, and it'll be fine.
Here's all the guns. Look at the cool things.
I was expecting there to be, at the very least, some good use of like the parkour and stuff.
Oh, because, like, that's you would hope.
Yeah,
so
I was hoping it wasn't going to just be a COD shooter like you were talking about. Because a big part of Titanfall is obviously everybody thinks about the Titans and the falling thereof.
Yes,
but for me, my favorite thing about the first one was just being able to zip around as the pilot.
Mm.
And whenever I got to call in my Titan, I would never get in the thing. I would just let it run around and do its own thing. And I would stay on the ground and rodeo other people's Titans and stuff like that. That's where I had the fun. And I was hoping there'd be a lot of pilot focused stuff in the,
yeah,
in the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
There was a cliched thing in the marketing. I can't remember the exact wording, but it was about like the bond between Titan and pilot or something like that. This idea that like,
sound rather,
you know,
cliche.
I think maybe that was feeding off Pacific Rim into the drift.
Yes.
And except rather than entering the drift with another human being, you'd enter the drift with the AI of your Titan. And so that was supposedly a thing that I thought might come up.
Yeah.
Eh.
The last thing I was expecting, this multiplayer, while being good, to be totally abandoned. Which, as we drift into the reality of our situation, was true.
Yeah. We had a go at multiplayer. That's not something I care about at all, but with a game that is so specifically multiplayer like this, it would be completely unsatisfactory for us to skip it.
And I'm pretty sure we haven't done a multiplayer-only game at all.
We've done games where multiplayer is a big focus, but it's nothing that I think it would be the primary focus of the game.
I can't even think of one that we experienced. I know we didn't play the multiplayer in The Last of Us. And Kane and Lynch, for example, the multiplayer does not exist anymore because the servers are shut down. But this is the first time where we were like, multiplayer.
Yeah, and so John makes a good point. To say it was abandoned might not be totally accurate. There were some gameplay modes that were definitely abandoned. We couldn't find a game in any reasonable wait time for like Capture the Flag or King of the Hill or anything like that.
Yep.
And when I played Titanfall 1, they were the best game modes.
Yeah.
Like territory control was amazing. We were only able to get into, I think they called it attrition.
Yeah, which is basically
just kill the other team until your point meter fills up.
Yeah. It's a classic Battlefield ticket system.
Yeah, exactly. And we definitely found players in that. John and I were coming in for the first time at level one.
Brand new.
And we were matched pretty reasonably with people who were quadruple prestiged at level 65 or whatever the top level is, who were just fucking slaughtering us.
I mean,
it was the worst.
It was almost breathtaking how easily we were slaughtered.
Yeah, like, because of the way that you move in Titanfall, you have this jump pack, and so you can run along walls and then do slides. And a wall run, you're moving at, like, 50% faster than when you run on the ground or when you just do a jump from the ground.
I can barely keep it together while I'm wall running because it's so fast.
See, I didn't have as much trouble with it because I play a lot of Mirror's Edge, which I really, really like, and this is a much simpler system than Mirror's Edge.
Mm, yeah.
So the basic mechanics of it I didn't have too much of a problem with, but doing what these people could do, the level that they were playing at compared to where I was playing, I don't think I'm not bad at video games, right? Shooters are not my forte, but I am a solid performer when it comes to that kind of stuff. These people were on the level of like speedrunners, like the kind of maneuvers they were doing and how they kicking off stuff and
the chaining of moves together. Not only were they pulling off good moves, but they would go from move to move to move.
Yeah.
To move.
And so the whole time they were moving, you know, 2 to 3 times as fast as I was.
Yeah.
And they were doing this chain thing where they would run off a wall and rather than landing on the ground, they would slide on the ground so they would maintain their momentum, and trying to keep up with people like that was just impossible. It has the same problem of every single competitive multiplayer game that has been out for a while, in that the people who are still playing it are insanely good and there is nobody for me to get matched against so I can learn the ropes.
Yeah,
you know?
And I was really excited because it came with a tower defense mode and I was like, great, we can play co-op with some other people so they'll do a great job and they can drag our asses through the game.
Yeah, we can learn some tricks but again, totally fucking abandoned.
Yeah, we were waiting there for like half an hour or more to match with anybody and it did not happen. And then we did manage to pull together
These are on Australian servers as well, we should say. Yeah. Like, we had a ping time of, I think I had 39 on my best ping time. It's not like we were trying to match with people on the other side of the planet. There were multiple Australian servers. We picked the best one and we still could not match.
Yeah.
In any other mode but attrition, which is really sucks because I think I would have had a great time with it if I'd been able to play at a competitive level. We did have one game where we weren't completely outmatched.
Yeah.
Like, our team lost, but we were like in the middle of the leaderboard overall. We weren't right at the bottom like we were for every other game. And that was really fun. We were able to get some good kills and do some cool moves.
Yeah, there was that one good game right there. Right?
Yeah.
And it was almost, it's almost enough.
It's almost worse that we had that good game because now I know what I'm missing.
Yeah.
I
really want to construct like a group or bring in some people and artificially create a multiplayer game because I feel
at least for the tower defense.
Yeah.
You know, that would be
minimum.
Great.
Yeah. I would love to personally get like a league or something. But the other thing that I noticed in the multiplayer as we were playing it, the UI is like Apple inspired. It's all like hazes and like crisp white icons.
I don't feel quite the same level, but it is a very nice UI.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily describe it as Apple-esque.
So it looks nice, but it's not the most intuitive to navigate.
Right.
Especially when you click on the menu, so when you load the game
up. Oh, you mean in the whole multiplayer tree thing? Yeah, that was atrocious.
So it's like they knew what good design looked like, but the navigation flow was weird, because sometimes in games when you play the multiplayer, it launches you into a separate run of the game.
Yeah.
It's just for multiplayer. And it didn't really do that, but what it did was you click on a mode to play, and then it would launch you directly into that find a game section.
Yeah, and then you have to like go up 2 menus if you want to get to the actual multiplayer menu. It was very, very strange.
Yeah, so it was like it was trying to get you there faster, but then if you wanted to form a group like we did, you have to go through EA's Origin interface, which was, it's serviceable. It's serviceable, yeah. Right? It was just a bit clunky to figure out the terminology to use.
Yeah, it's no worse than Steam's.
If you haven't done it for the first time, the Steam matchmaking and stuff like that can be unintuitive, and it's the same. It's just a different system we haven't used before, so I can't really remark it. But then...
They all need to be better. Yeah. All of them need to be better, is the point there.
But once we found the friends list, we got together, we were looking through all the menu options for, like, the different classes and stuff.
Yeah.
Because there's some of the special abilities you get in the single player, which we might talk about, their own classes in the multiplayer. And as we were doing that, we noticed that there was a currency
over the top.
It
was one of those things that if you actually came up to me and asked me if this was going to be in the game, I probably would have guessed yes.
Yeah.
But I just hadn't really thought about it, and seeing it in the menu really caught me off guard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's like the gold currency in phone games.
Yeah, it's your classic premium currency style free-to-play model.
Yeah.
Except, you know, what does Jim Sterling call this? A fee-to-pay game? Because you've spent 60-odd bucks on the full retail game, and then also they want you to do in-game purchases as well.
Yeah, and you can accrue this currency as you play the game,
and
it kind of serves as a shortcut to things that are unlocked via playing.
At experience levels. So there was a particular Titan chassis that I needed to get to level 7 to unlock, and John experimented by just grabbing a Titan chassis, and he could use it straight away even though he was level 1. So that you still can unlock this stuff through gameplay, and from... I've not heard of it being an unreasonable grind, but it is still just very much like, oh, fuck off. Like, especially this in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
It's just been like...
As the time of we record this.
Yeah, yeah. We're recording this just after all of that Battlefront 2 shit with EA has happened. We'll be releasing this a few weeks after that.
Yeah.
But my God...
Yeah.
You know, it just puts such a bad taste in your mouth to play a game published by EA that's got microtransactional currency
in
it.
And not only microtransactional currency, it has in the game purchasable skills that don't use the currency. If you want to get these special skins, you have to pay real life money on top of any in-game currency you accrue.
Okay.
So I'm not 100% sure on it, but it just felt like there was even real money in the in-game online store alongside the in-game currency itself, alongside of the experience levels.
It just sucks. It just sucks. And I'm tired of pretending that it doesn't fucking suck. I'm tired of pretending that I can put up with it or whatever. I'm just fucking done with it.
Yep.
And anytime I see it, even though I'm not the kind of person who gets suckered in by that kind of thing, I'm not the kind of person who has the...
Yeah, as we talked about previously.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. I'm not the kind of person who falls prey to that predation.
Yeah.
It still makes my gameplay experience worse just by seeing it. And I'm fucking done.
And for me, because we started playing through the single campaign first, and we'll talk about it later, having some of the guns from the single player campaign locked.
Yeah.
And this happens in Call of Duty, so like, you know, it happens everywhere. But it just... feels annoying.
Yeah,
like,
I felt very limited in my choices at level 1, and it just exacerbates that problem of fighting against people who have been playing this game nonstop since it came out, because they also have all the equipment that I can't use, you know?
Yeah, it's a hard wall to climb, and especially with the servers not being that populated and all of that kind of stuff, it would just be a struggle. You'd have to get some friends together, buy the game on sale, and play it that way.
Yeah, and like I said, the thing that sucks the most about it is that core gameplay loop of the multiplayer is fucking fantastic when it works.
There's you and the other pilots, and you call in your titans, and you just be giant robots.
Everything is moving and changing all the time.
Yep.
It's just it was moving and changing way too fast for you or I.
Mm-hmm. No time for practice. But that's the multiplayer. Now let's get into the single player.
Yes, something that we can talk about with a great deal more experience and authority, because we actually got to do the whole thing.
Yeah.
What were your general feelings of the campaign overall, John?
So it sort of starts with this like intro cinematic that I thought was really snappy.
Yeah, it was all right.
It was brisk. It got you up to date with a story that exists, and then it throws you into a VR tutorial kind of thing.
Yeah. Right? And this is what you get to do if the game is still downloading. You get to run this tutorial gauntlet in VR over and over again.
Yeah.
Which is not terrible. It's actually pretty fun.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. The game uses the fact that it's VR to do some cool, nice stuff. And this tutorial is great for me because it could show me how much I sucked at this game.
Yeah, and that's where I was going with it. Like, after you do the absolute basics where they teach you the stuff, they go, all right, now run the gauntlet. And it's kind of similar to the start of Modern Warfare, Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, where you can just run that over and over again to practice the basic skills. And once you finish the run, it gives you a rating and tells you what difficulty setting they recommend for you, which I think is such a great – Because we talk a lot about difficulty and sort of the judgment in difficulty at some points. I think it's really interesting that a game like Call of Duty 4, which is known as a very hardcore, get good, very competitive game, has that mechanic in its single player where it's like, hey, this is what you will find fun. You know, that's not judgmental at all. And I think it's very cool that this game does it as well. It's such a simple thing, but...
When Call of Duty did it, it was the natural evolution of all of their other training missions, which were just target shooting.
Right.
And like, so long ago, it's so old now.
Yeah.
But like, that was the next step, was to judge your play through a little tutorial and then give you an appropriate level of difficulty.
Yeah, the diegetic tutorial is a good mechanic, especially in a shooter.
Yeah.
Because it also gives you a bit of a chance to world build and build some character and stuff like that.
And the great thing about that, you're able to run it again, is you can get an average too.
Yeah, you have a chance to not just be thrown in a deep end. If you're really struggling with doing wall runs, you can just do this over and over again until you get the wall run down, because it's an essential mechanic for basic navigation in the game.
Like I said, when I ran through this tutorial, I got the lowest difficulty. I did a terrible job. I grasped none of the basic principles of how to wall run and chain those moves together to generate speed, which is like the main focus of the game.
Thankfully, that's not necessary in the main campaign because that is a pretty advanced mechanic, but the basic wall run is super essential. If you can't do that, you will not be able to complete the campaign.
Exactly. And I played through that tutorial and I had fun doing it because I, you know, I'm a gamer. I'm here to get that high score, you know, and it gives you a list of high scores to beat and then it can rank you there. And I did it a couple of times until I was like, yeah, I can play consistently at hard and I'll go ahead. And I felt when we played through the whole game, that difficulty was like correct. It said, oh, okay, you're hard now. And then I played through and I met an appropriate level of challenge.
Yeah, there were one or two sticking points for me, but I don't feel like that was a problem with even the level design in those specific moments. It was just me struggling with the puzzle myself, that I wasn't paying attention to where this robot would come in and one-shot me from behind, because I just needed to be more aware of the space.
Yeah, and it's one of those shooters where it'll build an interesting level and then it will fill it with the same kind of opponents. And then it will tweak order or how they show up in. And that has its strengths and weaknesses. In its strengths, you can understand the puzzle and you can understand the threats and know how to adapt to them.
Yeah, I think that there's truth to that. I felt like it was kind of weak in its variety.
That was the layup I was...
I'll just quickly alley-oop that and get that in. In at least Titanfall 1, you had creeps, which was very, very cool. So you have, like, you guys are the pilots. You're, like, the best of the best.
So super soldiers.
And then they populate the map with your basic militia. Grunts, militia, and so they'd start off with basic soldiers, and then halfway through the game, they would upgrade to Spectres, which are...
robot people.
Yeah, mecha soldiers who are the same size and everything. They're not the size of Titans, but they're much stronger. They take more hits.
Yeah.
And so throughout the game, you can earn tickets by killing grunts as well as you can by killing opponents.
It was a really interesting way to make players feel empowered in a multiplayer environment where everything's going 1,000 miles an hour.
I know we're kind of jumping back to multiplayer again here, but in Titanfall 2, I feel like there were just so much fewer of the AI.
They were there, but I agree with you. Yeah. It was like the enemy players were just wiping them from the game.
And maybe that's what was happening. Maybe the other players were just completely destroying them. But in the first Titanfall, if I was playing a game and I didn't feel like I could compete with the other players, I could still make myself useful by grinding points on the grunts, and I free up the other players to do other stuff in the game. Whereas in this, I didn't have that opportunity.
And while we're here, just talking about the multiplayer again, I get what you mean, but the best part that we didn't mention about the multiplayer is when a mission ends and you lose, right? Because we forgot about that, but I just want to bring it up while we're flashbacking, we're talking about gameplay. When you-
Yeah, this is fucking incredible.
Yeah. When you lose a game in Titanfall 2, it goes, all right, you've lost. Get to the dropship.
Yeah, bug out is what you get. And so you have to rush back to your team's dropship, and the enemy team- in this epilogue, they're trying to either kill you before you can get to the dropship or destroy the dropship before it can get away.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if you lose, you still kind of have a little bit of a chance to kind of redeem.
Yeah.
And if only one of your teammates gets away, you still feel like you've
triumphed.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a victory there.
Yeah. Now, do you know when that doesn't happen, David? When you die right before the epilogue happens every time, like I did. I consistently would die the moment the epilogue started or just before it. I would never get to experience it, and I would just watch other people have all that fun.
I think about stuff like this in games a lot. The way you can have non-zero-sum victories.
Yeah.
So in this situation. Team A wins the match.
Yep.
But if Team B escapes, Team A still feels good because they won the match, and Team B feels good because they managed to get someone, let someone get away.
Yes.
Now, unfortunately, sometimes Team A destroys the dropship, and so Team B loses the match and also gets wiped out.
Yeah.
And sure, Team A gets a victory there, but Team B feels fucking terrible.
Yeah.
And maybe another example is there are games like Gears of War, Halo, in some of the Halos.
Yes.
If you melee someone from behind, instant kill.
Yeah.
But if you hold down the melee button, you do an execution.
Yeah.
And so the execution takes longer and puts the executor at risk,
mm-hmm.
but it's humiliating to the other player.
Yeah.
And that's an example of what I think is kind of a bad way to get more of a sense of victory out of
it. It's hard to balance the feeling of triumph one person feels with the frustration another person could feel.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when you get executed like that, you go, fair play. Yeah, I didn't see you.
Yeah.
Other times it happens 20 times a game. You're just like, throw the controller down.
Yeah. And if somebody comes up behind you and just crunch and you go down, I don't take that personally. But if somebody executes me 3 or 4 times in a match, I'm just like, dude, come on.
Yeah.
You're already winning. And I'm already frustrated because I'm not necessarily having a great game. I can lose and still walk out of that game feeling good. But when you're getting executed over and over again, it doesn't feel great. And the execution mechanic is something else that shows up in Titanfall as well. You can do either the instant melee to kill someone without the animation, or you can do the whole execution animation.
Yeah, and I feel like these are like magnifiers in the multiplayer that can really add to something. But then I feel like they're not consistent. And especially in the multiplayer, the state it is now, I just never got a chance to experience it properly. It was just really sad.
The execution thing I'm talking about here, it acts as a good counterpoint to that difficulty thing I was talking about before. This is an example of a mechanic that encourages people to lord their skill over other people and kind of humiliate lesser skilled players and belittle lesser skilled players in this mechanic. That's what it's for, right? Mm-hmm. That's what makes you feel powerful when you do it, is that you're like, I'm so much better than you, I can toy with you.
Yeah.
And you can contrast that with a difficulty rating system in the single player that's completely non-judgmental, that's completely like, hey, we think you'll have the best time in this game if you do this. Not because, you know, we gave you some text box or we're all like, this is for the hardcorest of the gamers who are the best and have the biggest dicks.
You ran a challenge.
This is what we reckon you should play.
Yeah.
Like complete opposite ends of the spectrum. But we're getting distracted here. The reason we brought up the multiplayer again is because the enemies you fight in a single player are just the enemies that you get in the multiplayer.
Yep.
And they're clearly designed for a multiplayer
space.
And so there are limitations to that. There aren't that great a number. Some of the ways that they are planned out in these arenas are not that flexible.
Yes.
And the AI for the enemies is pretty rote. It's pretty much stand still and shoot at you. Because in the multiplayer, that makes sense. They're not designed to be genuinely challenging.
Very early on, like at the start, you get the ability to turn invisible.
Yeah, like you begin the game with that power.
I was like thrilled because that really added something to what was just a standard shooter. And they kind of would set up these almost stealth-like environments.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
But then it felt like you could never actually fully stealth run them.
Yeah, that was tough. There was one or two where I was able to stealth the whole room, but it's very hard.
Yeah.
And I think it's partly probably my fault where I'm thinking, okay, I'm stealth, so I've got to crouch and move slowly. And I think it's more the idea is you're supposed to turn invisible and then wall run and jump and like quickly take out a room like Batman, not so much like Solid Snake.
And that played to its strengths. I like the ability to just turn invisible in a shooter like this because if you get yourself in a situation you want to get out of, you just turn invisible.
And to be fair, this isn't an I win button. The AI is smart enough to figure out that if you turn invisible, they can still kind of look for you and potentially see you while you're invisible.
Yeah.
But if you're moving the way you're supposed to move in a game like this, then you will get enough distance and they'll lose track of you.
Which is incredibly fast and on the wall.
Yeah.
There
are some unique enemies for the single player campaign. They have these heavy grunts that could drop a shield.
Yeah.
But other than that, you've got your standard grunts, your specters and your heavy specters.
Yes.
And then they have reapers as well. And all of those are multiplayer enemies. And they're all just basically bigger, tougher versions of your basic guy who walks in a straight line and shoots a gun.
I guess that's kind of because the fun of the game is moving through these environments in a unique way.
And pulling that's off these combos. Something that really surprised me is that the level design is very good.
Yeah.
And like we said, we're not going to give the specifics of them just yet because some of them are that good. They are that good that you kind of want to go into them blind.
Yeah, because I did. Yeah. And I was impressed.
There were points where I was just like, Jesus Christ, that is good. Yeah. What I am looking at right now is, I had no idea it was going to be this level of quality terms of like how they play with your pilot movement.
That's a great point. Yeah, their level design there was just very impressive.
Yeah, and nothing like Portal or anything like that. But there are some points where you almost have to solve a platforming puzzle. Like, this is kind of basic, but you might have to move a crane holding a shipping container into the right place so that you can wall run off that and get to the next thing. So there's stuff like that. And that is the lower end of how clever this stuff is.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a lot to look forward to in that regard. And we'll talk about that a lot more later.
Yeah. So traversing these environments is fun. Shooting the somewhat admittedly limited palette of enemies is enjoyable.
Yeah. It's a good core loop.
And then you come across Titans. So you as Cooper, I think that's the guy's
Cooper,
name.
Jack Cooper is your incredibly original and flavorsome name.
Mm, yes. He is very much a character. and your cool robot buddy, BT, who is the player's Titan. You're moving through this game, sometimes together, you and BT backing you up, sometimes apart, where it's just you as Cooper running around the place. You can get inside of BT. This might be obvious to some people, but you can get inside of BT, who is your Titan, and you can pilot him like that.
Yeah, but as you said, there are points where they force you apart, so you're not in a Titan the whole time. The other important distinction is that if BT is destroyed, game over.
Yes.
You go back to the previous checkpoint. Mm-hmm. You don't get to call in a new Titan every time one gets destroyed.
Yeah, he's narrative relevant. It's not just like the multiplayer where you just, apparently you're just turning through almost sentient life forms. Just not looking into that.
Yeah.
Are they all alive? I don't know. I'm really worried now. Mm. But in this, he's treated like a mission critical character. Admittedly, one who is a giant robot with a machine gun.
A giant robot machine gun, even.
That's true. Not a regular machine gun.
We should probably discuss some of the differences in mechanics as well. Because when you're the pilot on the ground, we've talked about that, as you're zipping all over the place. You
wall
do
running,
have regenerative health.
Double jump.
It takes, four shots from a pistol to kill you in the torso?
Yeah, honestly, in
the
hard
health
mode,
scale is similar to what you would see in a Call of Duty game.
Yeah,
you are not invulnerable.
Yes. If you're caught in the wrong spot and you can't get out of it, you are done.
When you're in the Titan, you have a regenerating shield and then a fairly hefty health bar.
Yeah.
So think of it more like Halo in terms of the way the health scale works when you're in your Titan.
And as soon as you said that, it just made me think of the Titan combat as like basic Halo.
Yeah, and this is a comment I made when I played the beta of Titanfall 1. When the Titans come in, the whole playfield changes. You go from zippy, shoot, shoot, oh, I can only take two hits, I've got to be constantly moving, got to be constantly hiding, to I can take damage now, and I can absorb hits. And, you know, you have not power-up abilities, but you've got your primary fire on your gun.
Yep.
You've got a secondary ability, which might be a missile launcher, or it might be like a sonar pulse.
Or a laser.
Yeah, or a laser. And then you've got your overcharge core, which is like after you've done a certain amount of damage, you drop your super weapon, which might be a mega laser, or it might be
lots of missiles.
You know that thing that Pharah does in Overwatch where she shoots up into the sky and then just rains missiles down and everything? There's one that's like that.
Yeah, lots of missiles. Lots of missiles everywhere.
Lots of missiles. There are...
There's one where you can target lock people. You basically have a minigun and it smart guns it for you.
Yes, that's the one I was trying to think of. Yeah, there's one where you've got a big old minigun and then you don't have to aim it for the time that you're using the overcharge.
In the multiplayer, you choose a Titan loadout while you're in the menu mission, but as you're running through the game in your life, you're like stuck with that one Titan. In the single player, it just lets you, and like they don't explain it narratively. They literally, you just choose in a menu and you can do any unlock you want.
Yeah,
and
it's the bottomless inventory thing. Like you just press pause, choose a different loadout, and then BT just pulls out a different gun.
Which admittedly, fine.
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
Yeah, he's a giant robot. Who knows how much his trousers hold?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a lot of fun to call in that Titan. The Titan parts of it, I think, are a lot more rote because it is, like you say, very, very, very basic Halo-style gameplay. It is, you are here, you're at point A, go to point B, shoot everything in the way.
But I think they know that and they balance it well within the narrative.
Yeah.
So as you play through, there'll be the sections where you are on foot, and then there'll be the sections where you are fighting foot soldiers and you can jump into your Titan, and then there's like the Titan only sections, and they understand that they play differently.
I wish there'd been more sections where they would have encouraged the kind of play I like in the multiplayer, where I can get out of BT and I can be the quote rogue while BT tanks, and I can like sneak up on other Titans and rodeo them or whatever. There was never really a point like that. When you have these Titan sections, you are just in the Titan.
Basically.
I played it on hard, and these Titan sections were where I felt that difficulty setting the most, because I feel like it didn't take very much for me to get my health bar wiped out. And you pick up these battery packs to recharge your health that enemies drop when you kill them in the Titan, so you don't have true regenerating health.
Mm.
And so it works, but like I said, I feel like if I played that on regular, I might have had an easier time of those sections, which I did find a bit frustrating.
Yeah, I think my problem with it is that it was easy to wipe out the enemy Titans, but if I let them hit me, I would lose.
Yeah.
And that doesn't feel like a completely interesting puzzle. It just felt like take damage, do lots of damage, get health packs.
Yeah, and I think that that's the problem with it. It's really just a battle of attrition. You don't move fast enough in your Titan to properly dodge stuff. If you've got one of the Vortex Shields, which is an awesome ability, you do that thing that Magneto does where you stop all of the bullets in front of you and then send them back.
Which is cool as it sounds.
Fucking sick as all hell.
Yeah.
But when you've got like 7 NPC Titans, you can't really manage them well enough in that. There's this one section where you and a group of friendly Titans are doing a big Titan assault on this enemy base.
Yeah.
And that was a nightmare because the allied AI was always blocking every single shot I wanted to take. There's a character called Sarah Briggs, who's supposed to be like the leader of the resistance.
Yeah.
And she apparently has a melee build, I guess, because she was always next to every single fucking Titan I wanted to shoot, making sure I couldn't shoot it, but I could definitely get shot. So there were definitely points with the Titan stuff where if I had to put it on regular, I probably wouldn't have as many of these frustrations.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that the strength of the game is definitely when you're playing just as Cooper and as the pilot. Do you want to go into spoilery stuff now?
Yeah, the only other thing that I wanted to mention was it has collectible helmets in it.
Yeah.
Which seemed to me just odd.
I liked them. They have these collectible helmets. They're massive and they glow blue. They're probably the size of what, like a dog?
Yeah.
Like the size of a dog?
They're comically large and they float. Everything else in the world is true to life and real sized, and people pull weapons off themselves and stuff like that. And then there are these blue glowing helmets scattered around the place that float in the air.
Yeah, and I don't think the game was hurt by their addition.
True.
They're more about testing your parkouring skills than they are about testing your searching skills, because they're supposed to be very obvious.
Yeah.
As it would be like, can you reach the thing? Not so much can you find the thing.
Mm.
And so I thought it was just a nice little addition that helped solidify one of the movement mechanics of the pilot.
I think it was there, so it ticked in my brain, but I just didn't feel compelled to do them. It was like a thing on a checklist I would never solve.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Yeah.
But I can't really begrudge it, because it would have taken one developer 20 minutes to put them into a level, you know? It's just been like, hey, we finished the level. You know what? I'll just add an extra platform here and put a helmet there. Like, it would have just been a last-minute thought.
You're right. Yeah. It's not hurting anything.
So, yeah, I think we'll drop a spoiler here, because there's some gameplay stuff. This is before we talk about the narrative itself.
Let's call down a spoiler warning from the
Oh, yeah. It's time for spoilerfall.
Yes, there we go.
So, we'll start with some gameplay stuff, because like we said, there are some very surprisingly good set-piece moments in this campaign.
And if you want to play this campaign and you see the game on sale for cheap and you want to grab it just for that interesting thing, I would recommend it, because they were so interesting.
To say that this would ruin the plot of the game is ridiculous, but the value of the surprise is enough that we want to give you guys a heads up.
It was an experience that I felt better for having. So there you go. We've pre-warned you.
So we've got the 4, I think, biggest gameplay surprises here. Do we want to go biggest to smallest? Let's go biggest to smallest.
Okay. I would like to see what you think is the biggest.
I think the most surprising and the most impressive is that there's a point in the game where you go to a research facility.
Yes.
Where they're messing with time-distorting weapons.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get this little device that allows you to jump instantaneously from the present day to a specific point back in time. I imagine it's like maybe only a couple of months.
Yeah, but it's like these two points in time are fixed via a wormhole. So as you move forward in time, you're also moving forward in time in the past.
Yeah, so if you spend 10 minutes in the past and return to the present, it will be 10 minutes later in the present.
Yeah.
And if you spend 10 minutes in the present and jump back, you will have jumped to 10 minutes later in the past. So it's like a very fixed linear experience in both of these time worlds, but you are still jumping across time.
And what this means is enemies in one space or environmental hazards in one time don't exist in the other.
Yes. It's very clever from like a narrative perspective because it still lets them have this thing of like, hey, there's this guy invading our base and he's moving around weirdly. And you can still see the progression of them not being able to comprehend how you're getting from room to room in real time. And it works very well from a plot perspective.
To me, this is the strongest narrative and gameplay moment of the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? It's both tied together wonderfully. It flows seamlessly through them. You can get behind enemies with it and they'll have to turn around. And
they have these very clever ways of making sure you can't just jump as a way of saving yourself. If you get into a room full of soldiers in the past and then jump to the future after this base has been abandoned, there will be a bunch of these animal-like enemies in that room. So you're in for a fight no matter where you are.
Yeah, it's alternating between these two different fights, all while swapping dimensions, all while running across all the walls because you're a pilot.
And this is the thing that's great about this. From the gameplay perspective, the strongest part of it is that you have to use this time-hopping thing to get around environmental hazards. So, like, a basic example, you'll come into a hallway that's covered in debris where the hallway's collapsed and you can't progress. So you go into the past when the hallway was still intact, but now there are soldiers there. So you've got to fight the soldiers, but you can at least get past this hazard.
Yeah.
There's a really clever part where there's a machine gun turret set up and you have to time your time travels well so that you can do the platforming in the past, but you can't stay there too long or this gun will shoot you. So you've got to jump back to the present where there's debris in your way and you kind of have to like do this hop, 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 hop. So you can't spend too much time in one timeline. It's really fucking clever.
Yeah, I don't want to just describe it in detail.
Yeah.
But it was honestly amazing when it just came out of nowhere. And the time swapping ability replaces your invisibility.
Yeah.
Which is just perfect because it serves a similar purpose. So losing the invisibility, which is amazing ability to get you out of scrapes, isn't impactful in a negative way.
Yeah. You don't feel completely hamstrung by it.
Yeah. I was just so impressed with it. It was just amazing.
Yeah. You want to pick the next one?
Okay. So the one that I found the most like visually appealing and interesting, while maybe not the most like gameplay enthralling, was when you travel through another facility.
Yeah.
And they are prefab building environments to pit soldiers into.
So you don't know why. And I think that that's a very good kind of mystery thing that they build. But you're in this massive automated factory.
It's huge.
And they're prefabbing these little, what basically look like little office blocks.
Yeah, little tiles. And you see like trees inside of holders on wall racks, like hundreds of trees. And you're like, is this some sort of like colony facility?
Yeah,
thing,
that's what I was thinking. They're prefabbing like colonial outposts. Yeah. But what's so fun about this is that you have to go down this assembly line. And there are plenty of games where you have the assembly line section, right? This is by far the best fucking one I've ever been on because A, of the way that you move, B, the scale of it is massive.
It's planet-sized.
And you're on, so imagine sort of like, I don't know, like a quarter acre or half acre block.
Like a basketball court or
something. Yeah, basketball court size is probably a good way to do it. Yeah. And you're riding on this thing as this building is being constructed around you. And you have to make sure you're not in a place where, you know, if they drop a bookshelf down, you're going to get crushed by the bookshelf. So you have to be aware of that. And the enemies who are shooting at you.
And then sometimes the whole thing will just turn on its side.
Yeah, because they're moving it down. You've got to jump up and stand on the wall of this building that's halfway being constructed. Again, it's so fucking clever.
And there's one moment where the whole thing's on its side and you have to climb it and you're just, I honestly felt vertigo.
Yeah.
Right? I had to stop and take a breather because it was too much. It was just so impressive. And then you fight in this arena that just got built.
Yeah.
So you see this arena get constructed and then you fight in it.
And that's where they drop the reveal. It's like the reason these things are being built is because this is a test facility for militarized androids.
Yes.
and they test them on prisoners of war.
God.
And you're one of the prisoners that they've managed to trap in this thing, and you've got to fight your way out. It's fucking brilliant.
It's just,
and what, again, was impressive about this is that a strength that Titanfall has, a lot of people criticize it for this. In the first one, it didn't have a story campaign, but it did have a world, and they tried to tell the story of this fictional world through oblique methods where they just drop you into a thing and they're like, you're here to get these resources.
Yeah.
And the single player campaign kind of does this pretty well mm-hmm. as well. They don't give you a huge exposition dump. They just drop you in this mission and you figure out, okay, we're the resistance. They're the corporate evil guys. I'm fighting them because we want freedom and Che Guevara yeah. and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they want oil.
The narrative is very simple. But the world is so interesting. Mm. And I love it so much. The Titans and like the mystery around the pilots. You have knives that are computer hacking devices.
Yes. There's so many little cool things like that.
And like when you hack a console, you open it with your knife and you stab it and the knife does hacking things.
Yeah. It's got a little holographic display that comes off the base of the hilt.
All these little tiny things, like, this is a cool world.
Yeah.
Right? They've constructed an interesting sci-fi world, and they tell it vicariously through the story well, and it just excites me.
It reminds me a little bit of Shadow of War. You play Shadow of War, and you have one of these little mechanics. Shadow of Mordor, sorry. Yeah, this is the one that I've played. But you'll come across a mechanic, and you just kind of like, somebody thought this would just be a cool thing to add, and they ran with it. Yeah. And Titanfall, the whole game is like that. Like, there's a little knife that you can use to hack some of the robotic enemies, and then you've got a robotic ally who follows you around.
Yeah,
Someone who's just like, you know what would be fucking sick? Let's have them hack the robots. And they got a robot friend.
Yeah, that's great.
And the prefab facility here, even before I knew it was a test facility, like just the idea that environments are produced on this scale.
Yeah.
And that's what the scale of industry is like. It's just a very good world building.
Yeah.
Level to be in. It's not just like some meaningless throwaway thing.
And after the reveal, you get some like vistas of like how massive the facility is. And
yeah.
It's just humongous. I was really impressed.
And like the variety there is very cool as well, because you're like, they have these holographic domes that do like a skybox. And it's like, there are points where you're jumping in and out of these domes and the environments are going from these tight industrial interiors to what feels like a big open savannah. It's very, very cool. We've got a couple more fun stuff here. A small one is kind of an extension of the time stuff we were saying before. There's one or two points where one of these time dilation weapons either fires or breaks or something like that, and everything freezes and reality starts to break, and you've got to run through this fold in space-time as the ground is folding up in on itself and things are floating in the sky in the way they shouldn't. Again, very, very cool.
Someone had a great idea and they just added it in, and it just was a wonderful experience to play. And it just looks gorgeous as everything's frozen in time. You run around these environments with people flying through the air and debris. It just feels fun to play. And they don't overuse it too, which is just nice. And I think the last one is when you have to track down an enemy spaceship, and you do that by launching yourself from spaceship to spaceship as you fly in low orbit over this planet.
Much less than low orbit. You're in atmosphere.
Yeah.
A bunch of big, heavy space freighters, but in the atmosphere. And your transport gets shot down very quickly, and you land on the top of a friendly ship, and you're like BT, your Titan, he's on top of it as well.
Yeah.
And so there are these moments where he's got to pick you up and throw you to another ship, and then you've got to jump from ship to ship to ship to get to this MacGuffin that you need.
Yeah.
And like every generic shooter will have a mission that's on the top of a train.
Yeah.
Or on
a chase
like,
sequence.
Yeah,
or
a chase sequence where maybe you're in like some cars or whatever. There was just something that was like, turn that up to 11 and then you've got this. It was just a cool set piece to play in.
Other games have train set pieces? No, you're on spaceships and they're flying through the sky.
Yeah.
And then there's other Titans.
And you're getting thrown from one to the other and it shit's blowing up all around you.
And then, for no reason, you get to drive one. With your knife.
Yeah, for all of 30 seconds.
Why not?
But again, it was just this thing where someone's like, oh, you know what would be fun is if the knife that you stab into the console, what if that acted like a flight stick?
Someone just wanted to include that
little moment, even though it's all it is tilt back for 15 seconds, then tilt right for 10, and then you take the knife out and you're done.
Those moments, they produced such highs that it was just what made this game so enjoyable. The gameplay, as we've described, is so tight. And then with these wonderful, interesting set pieces that were unique, and they weren't just a turret defense or something really simple.
Yeah.
They were set pieces that were honestly really impressive and fun to play. I just had so much fun.
We'll move on to the narrative itself now, I think. It's pretty basic. It's your classic, we're the oppressed militia, we're going to fight this evil capitalist corporation.
Yeah, we're the...
Because they want our oil, but we're the good guys. And, like, the themes of it are totally fine. There's nothing really wrong with that message of unchecked capitalism is bad, fight them.
And, like, sometimes a core story should be simple to allow all the other elements to flourish.
Unfortunately, there are still some things I think that you... Not so much need, but there are some elements to that that are more noticeably poor than others.
Yeah.
Your character of Cooper is just really shit.
Almost never. I don't think he speaks in cutscenes. It's almost never.
No, I don't think he speaks in cutscenes. Whenever he speaks, is a gameplay moment, and you can choose between two dialogue options.
Sometimes.
And they'll be like, where are we? Or what are we doing here? Yeah. And if it's you responding to someone, it'll be generic, plain, brown-haired military response of, yep, let's get it done, BT. Or, oh, come on, BT.
Oh
no, you're really riding me hard. Like, let's this really,
do those
like,
japes.
Those really smarmy, unpleasantly sarcastic, try-hard replies.
I thought they were serviceable. On their own, they're fine. And they were voice-acted fine. But there's not enough there.
I think that when you have a game where your only meaningful dialogue options are effectively two fundamentally different personalities for your character does not have a personality. You know what I mean? You can either play him plain military man, yes sir, let's get it done, I'm the military guy, I've got a gun, let's do the violence, mission critical, roger that, yes sir, roger Wilco. Or you can do the smarmy, sarcastic, shoot from the hip kind of smuggler like, guy.
To call them two separate personalities is almost too much credit. To me, I just saw it was all blurred together in just person. It's just responses.
What bothers me about him is he's so generic, but they still feel the need. So there's one shot right at the start of the game, one shot that goes for like 6 seconds where you can see your guy in a pod panicking because the drop pod is kind of off course.
Yep.
And this is the only third person shot you see of your character for the whole game. And he is a generic brown haired white dude. And he's like,
I don't even remember that part.
And the whole rest of the game is in first person.
Yeah.
And what shits me about this is if you don't think your character is important enough to have a consistent written personality and that you're just going to let the player choose whether or not they want him to be a smarmy douchebag or a generic military man, why show me his face?
Oh.
Especially when it is the most generic brown-haired military guy face you could possibly have on the guy.
See, when I played this game, I must have missed the part at the start.
Yeah.
Because when I played it, the only time I saw his face is right at the end.
Yeah.
At the end credits, and they do what I want to describe as the most wankiest congratulation moment of all time. As the credits roll, and these wonderful people who made this game, who made a wonderful game, right? Their names are over the top of slow motion high fives and bro fisting and handshakes.
And he's got this really weird, like, shit eating, like...
Yeah, then they show you this fucker's
grin
face.
On his...
And up to this point, he could have been anyone. The voice actor was like, you could put that voice to any male face, admittedly. Yeah. And they show you it right in the middle. And you're like, why? Why did you do that?
It's like, I know this is such a small thing, and maybe this sounds a little bit too hardcore in the SJW thing, but they were one shot and a credit sequence away from this guy being any race that the player character wanted him to be. And I think that in some games, that's crap. Write a character, write the full character, and have that mean something. In a game like this, there's absolutely no reason why a player who is not white like me could not see more of themselves in this person. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's no presumption of race or appearance or anything other than these two shots. And it's the face that they give this guy, it was not worth designing.
Right. And because of the way the lines are delivered, and they're only delivered in these small bursts, there's no reason why you couldn't have dubbed this game with a woman's voice as well and let you choose at the start. Right? Because they have female character models in it. The multiplayer even lets you play as both male and female characters.
Yeah.
And not only people, robots too.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
I think this is a little bit strange. A person's gender is not defined by their physical characteristics, but I think it's really weird that when you go from a male body to a female body, it's a pretty typical male body and female body. The dude is a little bit too much bigger than the woman, but it's nothing insane.
Yeah.
When you go from a male robot who has a generic robot body to a female robot, The breasts on these female robots are huge.
And not literal breasts. They have boob plating. Yeah, on like,
they're not in any way designed to be like people other than the fact that they're bipedal. Like, their heads are not designed
their
to-
Their heads are boxes, yeah. Right? With a camera on the end.
Yeah, they are clearly designed to look like robots. They're not designed to fool anyone, but they just give them these massive, ridiculous breasts. And it's like, what are you doing?
And I don't know where I sit on that, because at one point I'm like, well, it's fine for a robot to sort of personify that way. But the robots, to me, were like a great way to give someone an ambiguous sort of look. It's like, oh, if you want to be gender ambiguous, you can play as a robot.
Yeah, if you want to be non-binary, pick a robot. That's a good side effect of having robots in something.
And then they gave the robots boob plates.
Yeah, and they made cartoonish gender.
And it felt like it, by that nature, it made the male robots be male robots and not robots.
And that's the thing. There's that trope in media of male as default. And so, I mean, I fall into this all the time in our Mass Effect 2 episode. You might have heard me refer to Legion as he. Even though Legion
has no gender.
And in the game itself, they make a big deal out of the fact that the correct pronoun for Legion is it.
Yes.
And I have that bias. That sucks. Yeah, I'm trying to do better. But in this game, it's another example of that, where you have a relatively plain-looking functional robot is the male version of the robot. And then when you have the female robot, the gender characteristics are ludicrous. Like, if you put the male silhouette of the human next to the silhouette of the male robot, they actually look pretty similar in terms of silhouette. You put the silhouette of the female human next to the female robot, the female robot looks like, again, a caricature of what femininity is. In the form of a robot. It's very dumb.
It went from what was like, oh, great, you can choose genders, to, oh, why does the robot have a gender?
Yeah. And what I thought was strange about this is, like, BT as the Titan is gendered male.
Yeah.
And that's, again, just having robots have gender in a sci-fi universe is not a crime, right? That's totally fine. I just thought it was a little bit strange that we've got the robot gendered masculine. Why couldn't the primary female character, player character, be feminine? That's just a good way to balance that, you know? And like you said, the character is so interchangeable, it would not have been hard for them to record alternate lines of dialogue.
Yeah, I don't know what the... I don't know. I haven't done any research into what the storytelling process exists in games, because I feel like it's weird, all over the place, different. And I feel like, sometimes I honestly feel like writers, and I think people said this before, writers in games come to fill dialogue boxes.
Yeah.
They don't come to write stories. Writers, as you probably would know, David, and other people who are writers, construct narratives. They balance things like representation and world building and characterization and fucking metaphor and shit.
And just on that topic, different games have different priorities. A game like The Last of Us or Life is Strange, obviously, the writers come into the process a lot earlier than they would in a game like this or COD or Gears of War.
I get that. But like I said, I don't know how games are made. Mm. I don't know how they're constructed. I don't know how that works in the real life. I don't want to be the dude telling people to fix a problem. I don't understand how difficult it is.
Yeah, that's fair enough. This is more of, when I say this kind of stuff, this is more of like directed at the whole development process overall. Yeah. This game came out late enough that gender should have been a consideration in their story. And in fairness, the leader of the resistance is a woman.
Yeah.
Not a great character, as generic as every other character in the game.
Yes.
But the leader of the resistance is a woman. The primary enemies of the game is this group of mercenaries who are a mix of genders and are also pretty good.
Yeah, and also, like, even the NPCs you encounter, it felt like, to me, a lot of the enemies you fought were always male, but some of your allies were male and female as well.
Yeah. When we're talking about the characters, just more generally the characters in the game, like I said, Cooper's not great. BT's okay. He's pleasant enough to be around. He's a good straight man.
If you had someone better to bounce off.
Yeah.
Like, if you had two characters of BT's level, of just funny, interesting, good world building in the dialogue, that stuff, it would just elevate that.
A lot of the smarmy, sarcastic stuff that Cooper says is only made funny by BT's response.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, he's a good straight character who I'm going to say straight character, I mean in a comedic structure sense. He's a good non-humorous character and contrasting that with the sarcasm of the pilot works.
Yeah.
But it would have been better if the pilot was written better. Like I said, the leader of the resistance, I could take her or leave her. But
I swear, the character model for her face was so shiny.
Yeah, it was like they didn't really... And her hair looked kind of weird as well. I don't think they put a lot of effort into her design.
No more... And like, I don't normally like to bring this up, but it was so noticeable. There were other skinned characters, like, with no helmets on and stuff. And you went to her, and it, like, she glowed.
She looked very weird. One thing that they do right in this, as far as characterizations go, like I said, the leader of the resistance, not that great. Cooper, not that great. But the mercenaries that you're fighting against, they actually are characterized pretty well.
Yeah.
They're overly reliant on nationality as a way of characterizing some of them. Like, you've got this one guy called Richter, who's clearly like a Schwarzenegger spoof.
And
the main guy, Blisk, is South African, and it feels like his whole character is South African mercenary.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you are introduced to the next, because they make up the boss fights.
Yeah.
And for every single one of them, you're introduced to them at least at the start of the level that you're going to fight them in at the end. Yeah. Like, they give you the time to understand who it is you're fighting.
And through level, you're introduced to more and more of their character as they communicate to their soldiers and things like that. You learn who they are as you play through the level. And it just draws into light how non-characterish all the other characters are.
Exactly.
And how, like, well-characterized the villains are.
Exactly. And we say well-characterized by the standards of any other game. Not really, but like, they're good enough for this. And so, like, just as a basic example, when you're going through that facility we were talking about before, where they're prefabbing the training environments, that's leading up to you fighting a artificial intelligence enemy who has a
Spectre's body,
and that's a feminized robot.
Yep.
And she's got this whole thing about how she's going to use you to better improve her algorithms for
the robot
weapons of war they're building and that kind of stuff. So it kind of works, right? Yep. One really weird thing about this game is that you're kind of sort of getting revenge for your mentor who died at the start. The guy who kills him, Blisk, the South African mercenary.
Oh my God, I only just realized what you're about to
reveal. You don't fight him
in
this game. He just leaves.
Yep.
And he just leaves. You kill everyone else in his crew, but he's just like, yeah, I'm not going to fight you because I haven't been paid to do it. So bye. And he just disappears.
Yeah.
And this guy that you have this half-baked revenge narrative against.
Honestly, Cooper as a character doesn't seem to care much. Almost like he never cared about his mentor and only BT does.
BT definitely does. He's all like, Captain Lastimosa would be proud of our progress. And I'm just kind of like, cool, I guess.
I don't think Cooper cares. I think Cooper was honestly like, this dude, this old man can just get me into being a pilot sooner. And so I'm just going to listen to whatever fucking war stories he wants to tell me or how beautiful his home planet is just to get that certificate.
Yeah, great. I love this home planet.
You know what?
I love how there are no buildings anywhere.
Now this version of the story, I'm in love with. The idea of Cooper not wanting to say anything about how much he doesn't care about Lacrimosa.
he's just humoring BT.
The whole time he's just like, yeah, it's real sad. Because all he cared about was getting his pilot's like certificate or something. Also for me, just quickly, I know we didn't talk about it in like the gameplay section. When you fight the bosses, when I played through it, even on hard difficulty, I rinsed them.
I had a lot of trouble with the boss fights.
I just picked one build, the Ion build, which is just a Titan destroying thing. And I honestly, there was no trouble. It was almost even easier than the other Titans.
Yeah, see, I had a lot of trouble with every Titan that I fought, and a couple of the boss fights were pretty difficult.
Wow, okay.
One other thing I'll say that I was kind of disappointed by in the campaign is all the boss fights are Titan v Titan.
Yes.
And it does make sense in one way why that would be, because the enemy can be a lot tougher, but I really wish that there was a moment where maybe there's like an enemy pilot and you don't necessarily fight them, but you've got to chase them down. And so like the boss fight of that level is a really intense
foot race. Maybe the spaceship you're on only has one Titan chassis and you need to get there first to put BT in and escape.
God, that would have been great. It's like you and another pilot. None of you have any bullets in it. Like, that would have been a great way for Blisk to go at the end because that's a very big, like, that's a very big villain death. They need to go down with a ship screaming while smashing on the window, watching your pod, like, drop down.
Yeah, or something like that.
Yeah.
But no, they never do. And it's every fight is always, you fight a different type of Titan.
The Titan fights are based around the classes that you have. So you've got one that's got the broadsword, you've got one that's got the grenade launcher type thing, and you've got one that's got the heavy machine gun. It's pretty rote.
And if you don't find the Titan fights difficult, like I didn't find them difficult at all, I rinsed through them, then the boss fights become nothing. And honestly, the only boss fight that stopped me was the one with Sloan, who's right at the end, who has a laser Titan.
She was the one I had the least trouble with.
And the reason why I had the most trouble with her is because with those Titans, you can do a finisher move. which is a slightly different end kill. And I wanted to get her finisher. And so I would, and she would launch a laser right when she almost dies. And I would just get clipped. It would just get stuck in a loop and I couldn't activate the melee kill because she was in laser mode.
Because she was trapped in that animation.
So like, it felt like the animations were stuck and I wanted to see it. And then it was unsatisfying.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I think that's pretty much Titanfall 2. Ultimately, it did get a lot of high praise for the story. Yeah. John and I did talk about this before we started. I think that's just because the bar was set so low.
Yeah.
It's very surprising in those high points that we've mentioned, but those, overall, the narrative is pretty rote. But honestly, I had fun with it.
It was worth playing. And if I could drag together two more people and we could do the wave mode better.
Yeah, that would be something I'd be super interested in.
Or like forbid the idea that between the two of us and our audience, we could get like 10, 20 people together to all play the multiplayer.
Oh, yeah,
one
and
day.
Do like a fully like private multiplayer match. Yeah.
Right. That would just be fun for everyone.
I think that it's five people aside, isn't it? Six people aside?
I think so.
Yeah. It's 12 in a match. So.
I always forget because of all the grunts. But I swear, if we could grab that many people and just play through it like that. This is my favorite thing with Magic the Gathering, is to play in these draft tournaments.
Yeah.
Where they're just standalone and only your skills in that moment matter, and they're not connected to the overall meta, which could have moved long past you.
Well, if any of you guys are interested in getting in touch with us and maybe playing some Titanfall 2, you can hit us up on Twitter at SlowpokesCast. Facebook is facebook.com/SlowpokesPodcast. Our website is SlowpokesPodcast.com. We're also on iTunes. If you just want to find more of our stuff, Google us there. Slowpokes.
Or you can look on our YouTube page, which is on our website. You just basically search our name in the YouTube.
We got a couple of unique things there. Now, John, would you, as always, like to inform our darling audience what our next game is?
Yes, David, I will, especially seeing as you put the right one in there. Our next game is Journey.
Journey by That Game Company. This is a game that I've played and you have not.
Yes.
It is very good.
Ooh.
For a lot of good reasons. I'm looking forward to playing it again. A different kind of game than we normally play here, a little bit more sensory than
that's a good point.
Yeah, than sort of typically narratively constructed. So it'll be a fun one to talk about. Join us for that. It's pretty cheap, I imagine, at this point, and it's also pretty short. So if you guys want to play it before the next podcast, that's totally achievable.
I think I picked it up via PlayStation's, if you have PlayStation Gold, every so often they just give everyone Journey again.
So if you're it's the Fez of the PlayStation Network.
But anyway, I'm sure it'll be super cheap. But yeah, if you want to play it, check it out. Otherwise, you'll know where to find us, and we'll talk about it next time.
All right. I've been David.
I've been John.
Thanks for joining us.
Goodbye.